Okay, our next speaker today is Jeff Welton. Jeff took his training at the Radio College of Canada Electronics Engineering Technologist Program, finishing in 1984. Really, really long ago. Jeff has performed component level repair, field installation and service, technical support, and quality assurance roles with various companies, and has been with Nautel for almost 26 years. The first 17 of which were spent in field service and technical support positions, as well as assisting engineering with design review of new products and improvement of existing systems. Since moving to sales in 2007, Jeff keeps finding ways to get his hands dirty and can frequently be found assisting in the install of a transmitter that he sold, as well as performing site inspections and the occasional repair. Jeff performs several presentations every year on the topics of lightning protection, grounding, transmitter site safety, and various other subjects of interest in the broadcast engineering field. Please welcome Jeff Welton of Nautel.
Okay, now we got to check and see if you can hear me through this thing. Can you hear me in back? Okay. I'm going to update that introduction someday. Today is actually my 27th anniversary at Nautel. And this is also the second year in a row that I've missed you at our Canadian Thanksgiving because of this show. So you guys are responsible for me not being in a turkey coma right now. Just so you know. Forward. They knew we were going to be giving this to sales guys. So Philip Schmidt did a paper at NAB on single frequency networking with HD radio. Has anybody ever done a single frequency network, an on-channel booster type deal? I see a couple of hands. I know Dell's hand's going up. How did synchronizing that work out for you? It didn't. Synchronizing an analog booster on frequency or any on frequency network requires a lot of things. It requires terrain shielding. It requires careful carrier synchronization. I'm going to choke on that word about 8 times in the next hour. The challenge is physics. As you go around the pattern of overlap, the signals are in phase or they're not in phase. Out of phase, of course, they cancel. In phase, they work great. It's the whole bunch of in between where the interesting stuff happens. They beat, they cancel, they interfere. It just gets messy. So we started looking at different ways of doing this. A third of a second. Oh, look, there you go. So we're going to talk about the different ways of doing it, different applications, some of the planning parameters. We're going to talk about DNU, desired and undesired signal levels. This is something that's really cool that we've discovered with HD single frequency networking. I think we may have finally found a purpose for HD radio. I mean, besides being the world's most expensive STL to drive translators. David Layer left, so I can say, anybody else from Ubiquiti here or Expiry? No? Good. Okay. I don't have to be tactful. Wait, I signed the waiver. I'm being recorded. I'll be nice. So one of the things we've looked at, when you're doing a fill-in booster, we rely a lot on terrain shielding. Okay, if you block the overlap with a conveniently located mountain, it works just great. In mountainous areas, a fill-in booster can be a wonderful thing. Signal over here in this valley, signal over there in that valley, big mountain in between them, piece of cake. How hard can it be? Except there's not a lot of mountains around here. Or in Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, pick a state that isn't on the West Coast. There are a lot of rules. You can't cause interference. Translators, what happens if a translator causes interference? I believe there was a situation just recently happened on the East Coast about that. You can't, where'd it go? There it is. You've got a limit on your ERP. You can't exceed the 50-50 contour. Okay? All that stuff makes sense. The challenge, of course, as I said, in the overlap, we've got potential interference zones. I like how they put 45 minutes on the clock, but they said, you got to get us back on schedule. Talk as long as you need to. Linda's not here, but I'm going to hold her to that. So there are a lot of applications where single frequency boosters, especially with HD radio, where we've got the ability of having individual programs on the HD channels, could be useful. You could do roadway coverage. Okay, that already sort of kind of happens. Has anybody ever listened to one of the highway translators going down the highway? Even when the orange lights are flashing on the side of the road and you rapidly try to find that channel and you get fire. And it's like, okay, that was useful. You could throw in very position-specific, location-specific, targeted advertising. You could be advertising a gas station within 10 miles radius of that gas station alone and have nothing to do with the rest of your coverage area. So there's some interesting things that can be done. A lot of that can be done with data channels. Coming down from Stevens Point the other day, I was driving along, and of course I tend to scan through the stations, and one of the stations I hit was running text of all their spots on the RDS. Good thing, bad thing, don't know. But it was really kind of interesting. If you happen to miss it, you could glance down and say, oh, yeah, and then you glance up, see the rear end of the 18-wheeler, and like I said, good thing, bad thing, don't know. You can also use it for microboosters, tunnels, areas where you're very, very geographically shielded. Okay, remember the things we used to use carrier current transmitters for in AM? Used to run the little leaky coaxes in for tunnels or around campuses and stuff. So it gives you the ability to provide very targeted broadcasting. You could do it for highway hazards, things like that, traffic data, whatever. The challenge we have right now, has anybody tried to shove a translator into a market bigger than an unrated one? What are the odds of finding a translator frequency in Madison right now? What are the odds of finding a translator frequency in Minneapolis? You know, well, you got slim and you got none. So that is something that we've always got to worry about. You've got to deal with co-channel interference as well on a single frequency booster. Again, if your translator causes interference in somebody else's protected contour, what are your options? Shut it off. So if we're doing it with multiple low-power transmitters all networked, we can create a pattern that you can't come close to creating with a directional antenna. We could theoretically cover the same contour with a lot less power. This is science project stuff. This is stuff to get you thinking. We can do this. We're already doing this in test mode. The issue, of course, is when you get into the real world, you've got your frequency, F1, oh, there's the button. You've got the adjacent channel on one side, you've got the adjacent channel on the other side, F1, F2, F3, and all the overlaps makes it a lot harder to shove a translator in there. If it's all F1, you've got a lot more flexibility. So that's the kind of thing we were looking at. Single frequency networking is a lot more spectrum efficient. You can put the signal very carefully targeted where you want it. Downside, of course there's a downside. More transmitters typically means more towers. Has anybody tried to put a tower up in a place like Minneapolis or Madison or just about anywhere else? It's an interesting challenge. However, something else to consider, low power single frequency network wouldn't need to be 1,100 feet in the air. Your tower might be 50 feet tall. On top of a building, exactly. You could bolt a Shively. Who else is here from the antenna guys? We'll stick with Shively just because I can. But any one bay or a single bay, low power. Again, we're talking small power broadcasting for a very precisely defined area. Something else we've been playing with, because we can. See, the challenge we've got is we've got a whole bunch of engineers that get paid a lot of money just to basically sit down and play what if. Or can we do this? Now your job's to figure out, should we do this? You know, because what do they say? Just because you can doesn't mean you should. We figure out if we can. One of the things we've been playing with is HD multiplex. Basically, it's an all-digital signal, no analog whatsoever. We can shove 15 channels onto 3 frequencies out of 1 transmitter. Think cell networks. Okay, transmitter pods. It's like taking the Eureka 147 system, which was great in concept, but L-band and the coverage does not work for geographically diverse areas like North America, and moving it down to the VHF band, where the coverage tends to go up dramatically. Now, some of the other challenges would be backup transmitters, some of the other options. One of the challenges we've run into is if you switch from a main to a backup, for example, in a single frequency network, unless the phasing is identical, bad stuff happens. Well, the funny thing is, in HD radio, bad stuff also happens, coincidentally. So you do need to time synchronize your X-Gen. Well, if you're doing a single frequency network now, you're already GPS clocking the 2 transmitters. You pretty much have to, whether you're doing it through a GPS input with separate GPS receivers, whether you're using something like GatesAir's Synchrocast, did I get that right? I think so, which is an awesome product for certain applications. Sorry, I got to cover that for a second while I say that. So one of the things we need to do is to synchronize our X-Gens. Easy to do. The cool thing about this, and this is where it gets really awesome, this is just math. If I have a signal here and a signal here, the signal from here will arrive there in X number of microseconds. The signal from there will arrive there in X number of microseconds, plus or minus so many, depending on the distance. This whole speed of light thing, physics is awesome. Now, if we could teach the government that physics doesn't necessarily mean you can change it, just because it's a law, it can't be repealed, we'd be good. So having them clocked together means that we're able to keep the receiver locked. Okay? And that's important. They don't have to be exact, and we'll get into that in a moment. And we'll talk about how far off they can be. And this is where HD lends itself much better than analog to single frequency networking. I can have them off. If this one goes positive a fraction of like a microsecond before this one, the receiver doesn't care. On an analog receiver, If this one goes high before that one goes high, bad things happen. It falls apart. You can end up with all kinds of multipath and self-interference, mutual interference. That's the phrase I was looking for. Third of a second. So, looking at the DU ratios, this is all well-known stuff in analog broadcast. We already know if I've got this much signal I want and this much signal I don't want, the receiver will lock. If I've got this much signal I don't want, the receiver will not lock. Okay, this is pretty easy. Again, this is math. So we set it up in the lab. This is just a pretty picture just to make it look like there's something on the screen. It's like I tell people, the slides are there so you don't have to look at me. I mean, I trimmed the beard and everything from what you saw in the intro picture, but the slides are there so you don't have to stare this way. So here's one of the cool things we found. If you look at the desired to undesired ratio in dB, and you look at the time separation, unless I am way far off, 75 microseconds to 2 milliseconds, I can pick up an iBox signal. Okay, solid HD, fancy little graphics. We're going to blame Philip for this because he's the guy that likes all the moving graphics and stuff. So above the red line, you got no HD. Now, one of the things you'll notice, the closer you get them, I mean, look at this. I can have a desired to undesired ratio of 3 dB. My undesired signal can be half of my desired signal, and I can still pick it up. Can you do that in analog? Unless you've got a really selective, well, a selective won't matter. There's single frequency. It's on the same frequency. It will interfere. Unless you've got a really good directional receive antenna. How many people have a really good directional receive antenna on their car? I saw that hand go right back down. Alex, you don't count. It's probably Arduino controlled, too. So here's the configuration that Philip had when he was looking at it. He was running MP1 mode. Obviously, MP3 will be a little more challenging because there's more bandwidth, more data. He was looking at the HD lock of a 4 dB desired to undesired ratio and added 3 dB margin for mobile receivers, which typically are deaf as posts. I have to say, I've got a little Nissan rental car. It's got a really good receiver in it for sensitivity, but the sound quality is terrible. That's a whole different kettle of fish. We're not getting into that one. So then we get to play with the math. Again, this signal's over here, this signal's over there. Where will they overlap? Physics, math, wonderful things. We can calculate this exactly for any vector in the overlap zone. If anybody wants me to do that math in my head, it's not going to happen. Mark's already analyzing it. I can see him. I can see the wheels turning. Okay, so basically, the challenge becomes when we send out a signal, we want them to go in a particular direction. We can control where we augment the broadcast. The cool thing about this is we can send the signal out of phase in the overlap zone, so they're not interfering, and we can send it in phase away. We can actually theoretically, without technically going outside our 50-50 contour, we can actually add a lobe. We can make this thing directional just by changing the phase. Anybody ever worked on a directional AM? This is what we're doing. VHF directional with transmitters instead of antennas and reflectors. So we offset as we want to get the delay exactly where we need it to be. And we can make the signal go out there, back there, whichever way we want to do. Again, math. This is stuff that we can do in the software live. So not only do you set it up with the known parameters, you can get it in the field and you can actually tweak it. And you can tweak it from any device you can control a transmitter from. So this is where we start playing with our desired, undesired signal ratios versus delay. And we can have a whole lot of fun with this stuff. Like anything else, you can make it as simple or as complicated as you want to. Sometimes we can take something that should be simple and make it really complicated. So this is, again, where we get into field strength and square law, right? What do they say? The last 90% of your signal catches the last 10% of your audience? Well, this is pretty much it. As you double your distance, you quarter your power. That's my very, very simple explanation in a nutshell. And you can see that as you look at the various modes, IBOC isn't as good as FM mono when it comes to a D-to-U ratio. FM stereo falls apart a whole lot sooner. So we're sort of in between. But we've got a lot more control over the phase ratios between the two signals. Philip also likes really bold colors. I asked for some fluorescent colors. I was not really expecting quite that literal. So with stereo FM synchronous booster, and Dell, where'd you go? Dell's back there. He's not even paying attention right now. He's doing emails and stuff. But I'll give you an example. When everybody remembers when the WEAU tower went down? That was a bad several months. And Dell, correct me when I'm wrong, not if I'm wrong, but when I'm wrong. You guys originally ended up putting a 5 kilowatt at the aux site near the studio and then putting a 20 kilowatt about 10, 15 miles away? Okay, so a 5 kilowatt main with a 10 kilowatt fill-in booster to replace the 40 kilowatt at several hundred feet that was laying on the ground. And you guys found some of these issues with the overlap. You can overlap it, you can synchronize it perfectly down I-94, or you can synchronize it perfectly over this field, but you can't do both. So depending on where your audience is, synchronizing this is a challenge. You are going to get a good clean signal at one point in that overlap zone. You can pick that point, but it's only going to be one place where it plays nice. Unless you've got a conveniently located mountain, which will help. So with mono FM, you don't have as much. You've got the same problem because you've got a better DU ratio available. You don't have as much of a problem. With HD, excuse me, I don't have a cough button on this thing. And I can't pull it away, it's kind of stuck to my ear. With HD, whoops, set the backward button. I'm gonna hit the wrong button here and screw it up totally. Oh, nope, there's the backward button. Red is forward, yellow is backward. I don't know what green is, we won't want to find out. With HD, our interference zone is much more tightly focused because of the way we synchronize the carriers. Because of the fact that we can have a little bit of offset before it totally falls apart, upwards of almost 75 microseconds. So we've got some flexibility. We've also got a little boost in the signal out that way. Now this is shown with one booster, obviously, in a main station. We've done testing with as many, I think the most we've ever done live is two boosters and a main. And we've created a pattern with it. The cool thing about it, and we'll get to that in a bit, is that the signal doesn't fall apart, and we're actually, especially in a mountainous area, but in an area with overlap where you tend to get the reflections and the multipath from any bridge or silo or anything, we're actually in a hybrid system keeping a lock where the analog is gone. So we're losing analog signal totally and able to keep HD reception going. All right, that and hybrid was one of the best ways to test this because, of course, with a hybrid test, we can test both analog and HD. Now, of course, they do play against each other a little bit because the HD carriers are on either side of the analog. So with the hybrid system, we get a little bit of signal boost. We get a much better no interference zone. In the interference zone, we've got the math to actually help us control whether it's in phase, out of phase, and whether it's an issue or not. So we've got a lot more flexibility to create a pattern to put any areas where the signal's going to fall apart over the unpopulated portion of our map. There are going to be some areas where that may not be an issue, but on the other hand, a possibility, in a major metropolitan area, for example, you're not going to have any unpopulated area. However, you're typically not going to have any mountains with multipath either. Typically, again, the West Coast is a little bit of an exception, which is why we did the actual field testing in California. So one of the things we discovered was that if you boost the HD level, it actually improves the system. This was a surprise to some. Who would have thunk it? More power means more coverage. It seems so logical. So, son of a gun, if you crack the IBOC up to the same level as the analog, it goes farther. Now, looking a step beyond that, and again, science project, some things we do just because we can, you tell us if we should. We can also take the IBOC above the analog. That creates some other unique and interesting challenges. Has anybody ever heard an AMHD station? Has anybody ever heard an AMHD station interfering with itself? Some of the same hands. We can do the same thing in FM. I wouldn't say we should. Actually, we definitely shouldn't. But there is a point where increasing the HD carriers is no longer an option because you start to interfere with your analog. And that's the whole thing I get into whenever I'm doing anything related to HD, and they say, well, let's run the audio through the exporter for the analog. And it's like, do you really want to run the signal that 80%+ of your listeners are listening to through one more computer? All right, this is a similar situation. There are some things that you just don't need to do. Another option, coming back to the HD multiplex, is to take the analog totally away, run digital only. Now, some people have suggested this might not be a bad idea for folks wanting to do digital translators. If you want to translate in HD, do it as an HD only translator. Some folks have said it might be an option for LPFMs to expand coverage with digital only, not interfering with any analog carriers except, again, first adjacents, but it gives more flexibility. As receivers become more and more prevalent, little by little, very little by very little, but as they become more prevalent out there, this may become a viable option, an alternative, something that might help in some situations. So doing it as a hybrid system, we throw up a bunch of translators, we take our signal, we kick it out, and turn our nice little circle into sort of a triangle-ish looking thing. I'm sure that has a geographic name or geometric name, and I don't know what it is. We can do the time advance, and we can, although we can't eliminate all of the interference, especially between the boosters, this zone, that zone, and that zone, we can control it a lot more because we can have our digital ones offset by up to 75 microseconds, whereas our analog starts to fall apart long before that. I gotta see how far that clock is off the real one. Oh, we got 24 minutes before Linda comes in and taps her wrist. So, as I said, we did actually field test this, because what fun's a science project if you haven't got a guinea pig to try it out on? And there's a station in California that wanted to run a single frequency on-channel booster, or two. They're in a very mountainous area. They were getting some terrain shielding. The issue was that they weren't getting the coverage from either their main signal or the booster that they'd really hoped to get. Short antennas, tall mountains don't play well together. FM doesn't ride over the top of the mountain like AM does. So we set it up in the lab first, and we just added an arbitrary 1 second delay between each stage of the system. I mean, it's a basic HD system. You got a processor, you got an exporter, you got a pair of transmitters with X-gens in them, out an antenna and feed a mod monitor. Life is good. We used the, what is that Inovonic time alignment, do we think, E? Alex? Justin, thank you. Our engineering guys fell in love with that thing. I don't think we've sent them back their demo unit yet. I have a sneaking suspicion somebody's going to be paying an invoice shortly. So that's one other thing. Having an off-air signal, having your analog to digital delay locked in is critical. Now, theoretically, I emphasize theoretically, it's already critical. You should have your analog and your digital within a few samples. In real life, if you're running a hybrid HD station, a lot of them don't necessarily... Let's just say that rule seems to be a little flexible, and leave it at that. So time alignment is absolutely critical. And having an off-air time alignment system where it picks up the signal, measures the separation between analog and digital, and dynamically delays it in the transmitter or in the exciter so that they both hit the antenna port at the exact same time all the time is critical. So we found that our startup delay was better than 2 microseconds. You remember going back to our first Mac, 75 microseconds was where we started to lose HD lock, even at low DU ratios. So 2 microseconds is pretty respectable. That's not a bad delay. Typically, if you're not synchronizing, you're looking at 400 microseconds or 0.4 milliseconds. That's pretty noticeable. 3 milliseconds is audible and annoying. What was it? I think it was Orban did a study many, many years ago that figured that 18 milliseconds was the max that a DJ could handle for delay in the headphones before he started to slow right down. Okay, so we throw a guard interval in there for timing, do an offset, and in this case, we're looking at a main transmitter with three on-frequency boosters, all running hybrid HD. And this picture's taken in one of the interference zones. So, our guinea pig. Like I said, first we decide if we can, then we do, then we find a guinea pig. Typically, for anything related to new gear and HD radio, the guys over at KVSC, who are sitting over in the corner there, they're my guinea pigs. They have serial number 0 of one of our transmitters. They got the serial number labels a month after they got the transmitter. So in this case, we went to these guys because, well, again, there's not a lot of mountains in Minneapolis or in St. Cloud, close enough. It's only an hour drive. So we've got a main transmitter, 39 kilowatt directional. Shouldn't be hard to put HD on that. And we've got reception maps. We've got a booster transmitter. 200 watts. 200 watts is not a lot of power in a mountainous region, but for a booster. They were having a lot of signal fragmentation because of the terrain. Again, mountains and multipath, cities and high rises and multipath. You ever try to listen to a receiver anywhere in New York City? It can be interesting, especially in a car. You get a lot of side and back radiation, depending on how your antenna's mounted. In their case, it's a side-mounted directional antenna. So pattern or towers, those big steel things that we connect the antennas to, who knew they actually reflected some signal? So this is what we did, and again, it's a pretty standard HD installation. The catch, the difference, is that the exporter was at the main site and it's feeding a signal back to the studio and kicking that over to the booster site. So the audio comes from the studio, goes to the main site over a pretty conventional STL, pretty straightforward. HD is generated at the main site and then fed back through the studio, which is the relay, to the booster site. Linda's making funny hand signals that I have no idea what they mean. Probably keep talking. So we've got two STL paths, and again, Mount Wilson and Oat Mountain. One the booster, one the main. HD mod monitor, like I said, for the time alignment and phasing, and this is critical. And so, unsynchronized, running these two boosters, this is our coverage. Basically, the purple is where you can receive them. This is 20 dBc of HD injection, by the way, the minimum. Sorry, those were the interference zones. My bad. You notice once we synchronize them, a lot of the noise goes away. Well, that would be true of an analog on-frequency booster too, except with the re-radiation, we don't just have an overlap zone here. We've got an overlap zone all over the San Fernando, I'm not even going to try to say, San Fernando Valley, which coincidentally has people in it. A lot of people. More than a couple of hundred. So, this is where the math came in. Start playing with the time of arrival. Remember, this whole speed of light thing. If you shoot a signal from here, it will get there in X microseconds. If I shoot a signal from over there, it will get here in Y microseconds. How do I make X equal Y as far as the arrival time? Math. I love math. So, drive test results. tested on minus 20 dBc. Now think about this for a second. That booster is 200 watts. What's 200 watts? What's 20 dB below 200 watts? Mark, don't answer. I know you got this one right off. 2 watts. 2 watts. 20 dB is 1%. So we tested it at 2 watts of digital power and at minus 14 dBc or 4%, 8 watts. Now we're playing with power. So they got solid IBOC coverage in Santa Clarita. Good coverage, blah, blah, blah. Whole lot of math, or whole lot of words, whole lot of words. The funny thing was, even with 2 watts, they were getting a much better signal than with the analog on-channel booster. And the HD was locked when the FM, the analog, was already gone. Okay, that is where this is really cool. Now, you do get some dropouts. You go under an underpass. Again, that whole physics thing, VHF does not go through rock and concrete and stuff like that really well. So when you've only got 2 watts to play with, it's not going through that underpass. Ain't gonna happen. However, they did see some significant improvements. So an HD booster right now as a single frequency network is an option for any area where you may have not got the ability to put a translator on a different frequency, or where you need to kind of shove the signal just a little bit further than it's going right now without technically exceeding the 50-50 of your primary. So there are a lot of options there. And those are the kind of things that we were looking at when we come up with this. Like I said, we figure out can we, you figure out should we. Those are the guys at KUSC who volunteered to be our guinea pigs. As of 2 weeks ago, they're working on a cool new project. There's no slides for this, but the cool new project is that they have a competitive station that is co-channel that is going to go HD so that we can synchronize it 180 degrees out of phase and totally eliminate all interference between them. Because that's an issue they've had. So if you're over there and you're locked on their competitor and you keep on going toward them, and I say competitor, it's not a competing frequency per se, it's commercial versus non-commercial, but hey, we're all competing for ears. So they're actually working with these guys to allow them both to boost their respective signals without interfering with each other, something that'd be totally impossible in the analog domain. So that's the science project. That's the cool thing. Now, the questions become, is there any application for this in the real world? I mean, beyond what I've already played with. There's something you guys could do with something like this, assuming, and let's assume for a moment that HD didn't stand for high dollars. Assuming it was cost effective. Can you think of an application where you've got a directional right now running 100 kilowatt ERP where you could probably drop it to 10 kilowatts, put in two kilowatt boosters, cover the exact same population, and cut the power bill by 80%? At a guess. Now, the caveats come back, as I said. Multiple transmitters mean multiple antennas, which typically mean multiple things to mount them on. So there are some things. I just threw myself away. Hey, I sound better with it down there. Either this thing's got some gain or I'm... Okay, there it is. There, we'll leave it on the shoulder. Obviously, the big old floppy Dumbo ears aren't very good for this kind of microphone. Solved the sibilant problem, though. Okay, so looking at it from you guys' perspective, is this something that you could actually think you could find an application for here and there?
It's actually up.
What's that?
It's actually up a little bit, so it's not...
There you go. Long as I don't run the beard against it, we'll be good. Any comments, questions, criticisms, concerns, things to think about, things to talk about? Dell. Dell's got first-hand experience with this, so. Where's our roving microphone? Steve's coming up behind you, other shoulder. There you go.
How does multipath affect the points where they cross over between the two?
A lot less.
Okay.
I can't give you any statistical evidence, but I can tell you from firsthand experience that HD, remember that with HD you got a sideband here and a sideband there. You don't just have the carrier in the middle with the sidebands right on it. So typically in any multipath situation, an HD transmitter will perform a lot better than an analog. We do still get, of course, some multipath related dropouts, and you're not going to get rid of those. But as we saw in the, let's flick backward a whole bunch of clicks. I hear that thing back there going click, 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 you're killing me. There. So unsynchronized versus synchronized. Unsynchronized would be an example of a multipath prone environment. And it makes, it cleans up the interference a lot. Anybody else? Alex, you already thinking of a way we can use this? Jim's sitting there looking at his budget going, no. How do we do on time? Oh, almost got it back to schedule. Alrighty, folks, if there's nothing else, oh, Lord, get that out of there. Thank you very much.